Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies, we'll reach in there, we'll pull the baby out, clip the cord, but not in a creepy way.
Oh no. That's creepy just hearing it.
Awkward.
Be ready?
Yeah.
All right, welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1997 Luc Besson thriller. Well, I don't know, thriller. It's a space comedy action flick, The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
So what brings us to The Fifth Element?
Well, it's on my
list of judgment.
But no, it was just a cute movie. I mean, it's a movie that I saw in the theaters. Pretty sure I just moved to Portland. So it was one of those that I didn't know anything about it going into it. I got invited out. We went out. It was a great time. It was a silly movie. It was kind of, a silly movie with some social commentary. You know, there's some very decided commentary in it that was cloaked in it. But, it had some funny parts. It had some serious parts. It had some tension. And yeah, it was all around kind of a good popcorn sci-fi flick.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it too. I mean, it's just fun.
Yeah, and it's still on rewatch. It's still fun. I still watch it. This is, I think, one of those movies, discussed before that, if it's on, I'm going to end up watching it. If I flip the channel and it's on, I will watch it. And if I just want to watch something, sometimes this is a movie I just put in and watch just because.
Yeah, well, it's got lots of compelling actors. I had forgotten who all was in this movie. I mean, I had remembered Bruce Willis, and I had remembered, obviously, Chris Tucker. And, I had forgotten about Gary Oldman until I saw his name. I'm like, oh, wait, now I remember what Gary Oldman's character, but I had forgotten his accent.
Oh, I love Gary Oldman. I mean, I think he's great. I mean, he's crazy in real life, but as an actor, I really dig him. So.
Oh, yeah. He's very versatile. This accent just being one of the things.
Yeah, but he carried his accent well.
Oh, no. For all the crap I give people in the last couple of movies for not being able to maintain their accents, he does a great job throughout this whole movie, even when he's yelling, which is hard to do.
One of my favorite Gary Oldman movies is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
I've only seen that once, and we're going to have to probably do it at some point.
It's a hilarious movie. It's a smart, funny movie, though, and it's a movie you have to pay attention to. You cannot watch it casually. You have to watch it with all you have. But it has just the most brilliant, funny, of it's very subtle, but anyway.
No, I think that was one that Terry said, okay, we need to watch Hamlet, and then we need to watch Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Oh, no.
Otherwise, I wouldn't have got all the references.
I suppose that's true, but are we talking about, like, Mel Gibson Hamlet?
I can't remember. Well, yeah, I don't think we watched the 4-hour Kenneth Branagh version, so it must have been the Mel Gibson one.
I'm remembering that correctly, though. Am I not?
Yeah.
Mel Gibson.
Yeah, well, I was actually fine, as I remember it.
No, it was terrible. I would have, anyway. But no, I mean, good for you. Did you made it through Hamlet and you started Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and couldn't finish it, or you just didn't?
Oh, no. I watched it. I just have only watched it that one time. It was fine. I liked it.
Did you laugh?
Yeah. No, I thought it was great.
Yeah. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, I remember that was definitely one you actually had on VHS.
It's not in my
list of judgment.
Because I know that it is a movie that you have to get, and some people don't get it, and that's fine. But that's why I don't judge people for it, because it's one of those movies that you have to get the whole movie. I'm motioning with my hands like anybody can see. It's kind of like a whole world, a sphere, if you will. You have to take the whole movie as a sphere and embrace it as such. Otherwise, it's kind of high concept in that way, I guess. So.
Unlike The Fifth Element, which is not high concept, but still is quite entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know about the history of this movie as far as how this, who wrote the script and when it was written and that kind of thing?
No.
Because I did not until I watched the movie And then I did a little research and I read Roger Ebert's review of it, which is worth seeking out. I'm not going to read a big long thing, but his review gives the movie a little bit of credit for how it was written. This movie was written by Luc Besson when he was 16 mm-hmm. years old.
Oh, wow.
And of course he was 38 when it opened in the cinema. But along the way, of course, you know, he became a director and a writer and all these things. He now has friends and colleagues that he can go to help him help his dream become a reality. And who does he go to? For production design, he goes to two comic book writers, Jean Giraud and Jean-Claude Mézière, which I'm butchering the names, I'm sure. But then the costume design, Jean-Paul Gaultier.
It's a very stylistic movie.
Oh, it's the costumes are amazing. And
yeah.
At first kind of off-putting, I thought. But everything is so, all the way through the movie, everything is so detail-oriented from the production value. The sets are detail-oriented. The costumes are detail-oriented. Again, it's another one of those beautiful movies the Andersons love to watch.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's, first of all, it's a vivid movie. And I want to say it's a bright movie because there's a lot of dark in it. But it's a vivid dark, which is, it's hard to get that in a movie. And even on a, even on the big TV screen, and I assume you probably watched it on a tablet, but
actually I watched it on a relatively large computer monitor, which is a relatively small TV.
Excellent. And I watched it on my TV, and even on the big TV, it still looks great. And that's not, you can't, cinematic movies that are, when you see them in a movie theater, it's sometimes they don't translate well when you watch them at home because you lose a little bit of the aspect and the sound. And, but to me, this didn't suffer. And maybe because it's just because I like this movie a lot, but even still.
Oh, as far as aging?
Well, not as far as aging, but I mean, as far as the visual, like you don't lose a lot when you take it to the smaller screen.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes
I see what you're on.
When you bring the movie down, you lose some of that, the impact of the visual.
Oh, exactly. Like the space scenes are much more dramatic when you're in a theater.
Yeah.
And you've got the surround sound and the huge screen and you're immersed because it's dark. And, you know, at home I'm watching TV and the dog is barking and the child is playing and whatever.
Right.
But no, this was, and the main characters, well, the Bruce Willis character and the Mila Jovovich character are all wearing light clothes. They're all wearing white and orange.
Well, the good guys are wearing light colors and the bad guys are wearing dark colors, and the kind of the people you're not sure about are wearing like neutral tones. Cause the priest is not exactly a good guy. Although he's ultimately a good guy, he's not really a good guy.
Oh no, he's very goal oriented.
Yeah.
Actually, Gary Oldman's character is very goal oriented. The priest is very goal oriented, and that's about it.
Well, I would say Bruce Willis's character is very goal oriented too, but his goal is much less noble or grandiose.
Well, okay, I guess we'll get into it when we get into the plot of the whole thing. But by the way, this movie was the highest grossing French film in the box office until 2011.
Wow. Because they're considering it French because it was Luc Besson.
Exactly.
I see. So how much money did it make?
Let's see, $90 million budget, and it earned, only at the box office, it earned $263.
Because I was reading something last night, and the special effects budget was $80 million. So out of the $90 million budget, $80 million was special effects.
That couldn't be right. I mean, maybe I'm sure it's my budget numbers that are wrong.
I was boggled by that fact. So.
Yeah, well, it was. It's a very production special effects heavy movie.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's reliant on special effects, and some of the special effects help. Some of it's a little, there's a couple parts where I was like, ooh, that did not translate.
Well, but there were lots of practical effects, though, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they built big sets.
Yes, they did.
So, we gonna get into the plot?
Yeah.
Okay, so, the movie starts in 1914. The aliens known as the Mondashowans, I don't know. They arrive at an ancient Egyptian temple to collect the only weapon capable of defeating the great evil that appears every 5,000 years. The weapon consists of four stones representing the four classical elements, and a sarcophagus containing the fifth element in the form of a human, which combines the power, blah, 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 and defeats evil. If evil shows up and they can't do this little dance, then evil rules the world and they're always lost.
You know, it's kind of interesting because this is a story about unmaking the universe, which is not unlike Dogma last week, which is about unmaking the universe. Not that I had intended that to be a tie-in, but, you know.
Well, and, you know, from the very beginning, you don't know in this movie who's a good guy and who's a bad guy.
Right.
And the people, actually, a lot of people in this movie are doing what they think is the noble thing or the right thing that turns out not to be productive to what is considered, you know, saving the world.
Not unlike a metaphor for life.
Maybe so. But who's the Luke Perry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I wrote that down.
Luckily, he does great because we don't see very much of him.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird one-off performance from him, you know. I'm trying to think in 97 where his career would have been. I'm guessing that maybe that was one of his early attempts to leap from the small screen to the big screen, which didn't really go anywhere.
Oh, maybe. Well, and there was a lot of stunt casting in this movie, I thought. Or maybe just odd casting choices. And we'll get to some of them. But anyway, so you have this fairly long opening scene in 1914 where there's some action and some intrigue. And we discover that the aliens, who could easily be the bad guys but turn out to be the good guys, are there to collect this weapon. And they'll bring it back later when it's needed in 300 years.
But I think watching it the first time, you thought they were bad guys. I mean, you get the impression that they were bad guys.
Oh, yeah. And that's why Luke Perry, who you assume is a good guy, when he attacks them and kind of messes up their plan a little bit, he's actually not helping things. He just doesn't know it. And like the priest that was going to poison the archaeologist, he turned out to be a good guy, too.
Right. Well, and because he had the responsibility. I kind of like that sequence because it was major exposition, but without somebody, there wasn't a character that was doing it. It was actually the story, the backstory, which I appreciated a whole lot.
Oh, yeah. It treated you with respect. Even though this was a comic book kind of movie, it's still not going to feed you everything in one big, long exposition, like a Star Wars scroll, for instance.
Right. And the other thing I noted about the beginning of this, which is true throughout of the film, is that there is great both environmental sound and music in this movie, and there is a great attention to detail to both. And so there was a lot of elemental sound that went on, which I kind of it really lent to itself, but it did, you're right, it just had there was a great attention to detail in the scenes as well. In the opening scene with the grappa bottle, you know, the devil on the label.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of attention to detail throughout the whole thing that I really appreciated. I mean, again, it's, you know, it's kind of a goofy, you know, Flash Gordon kind of story. And as Roger Ebert pointed out while, you know, giving it a little bit of a pass, because it was written by a 16-year-old.
Well, but, okay, it was written by a 16-year-old, but surely he polished it since then.
Oh, of course, yeah, absolutely.
Just because he wrote it at 16.
Well, and he's not even
the final product.
Yeah, he's only a co-writer of the actual film. It's just based on his story.
Right. The screenplay became a collaboration.
Yeah, as everything is, I'm sure.
Right, but I'm sure it was an ego boost to have his adolescent story come to life.
Oh yeah, what is better than that? You know, to have a story that you envision and then you get it to make it onto the screen that looks this good. I mean, I'm sorry. He can actually take a bow, I think.
But then you have to be like Chris Tucker.
Oh, well, you know what? It's very funny because we're going to talk about Chris Tucker and I may owe an apology to Chris Rock, but we're going to get there a little bit later. But yeah, I definitely want to talk about Chris Tucker.
All right.
But yeah, just to see your vision on the screen in this brilliant, you know, I mean, he should be happy. And what I was going to say is this is right between the time that he did Leon the Professional and La Femme Nikita. It's all in that period.
Both great films, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And then right after that, he did The Messenger, the Joan of Arc film with Mila Jovovich as Joan of Arc.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good movie, too.
And then he's gone on to direct such hits as Taken 2 and that kind of stuff. And The Transporter, I think.
Yeah, well.
Which are still fun, but they're not, like, this quality.
Something's got to pay the bills.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, anyway. So that's, we're done now with Ancient Times, and now we flash forward to 2263, and this great evil appears in the form of a giant, like, planet-sized ball in space.
Which was kind of reminding me of Spaceballs, by the way.
That's funny. I haven't seen Spaceballs in so long, but I definitely want to revisit it.
Oh, yeah. Put it on the list, on the calendar.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we need to talk about the calendar, too, because I realize I've been controlling more of the movies that you and I talk about than I intended to.
And Barry, if you're listening, I haven't forgot you. I will email you the link to the calendar by the time I'm done recording this tonight. So.
Well, and you've noticed that I put up the next couple movies we're going to release so that people can actually see the movies before our episodes drop. Okay, so we go ahead to 2263, and now we have the priest. Did you recognize the priest, by the way?
You mean Father Vito?
Yes.
I don't know where he's from. I mean, I recognize him, but I don't know what else he's done.
He's been in a ton of things. Now, recently, though, he's been Bilbo Baggins in all the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings Hobbit movies.
Oh, see, I haven't watched a single one.
Yeah. I only watched the first one, and I didn't get through it all because I thought it was a snooze fest.
Well, and I think you and I have talked about this before. I was forced to read all of the books. And when I say all of the books, I mean all of them by my freshman year English teacher who had some crazy idea that it was the most important literature work that needed to be impressed upon all of us as a class. And after having been forced to read all of them, I have no desire.
Well, apparently they're visually stunning films, so. Good on you, Peter Jackson. But he was also, Ian Holm, who plays Father Vito Cornelius, he was also Ash from the 1979 Alien.
Oh, he was in the 1990 Hamlet, and he was in The Naked Lunch. I'm looking up IMDb now.
Oh, yeah, he's got a lot of credits.
Yeah, no, he's been around.
He's an excellent actor. You can tell from his screen presence. Do you know who's a little bit less excellent of an actor? Which I thought was a little stunt casting, was the President of Earth.
Yeah, I don't recognize him. I mean, I know I've seen him in other things, but I'm not sure who is he.
He is Tom Tiny Lister Jr. He is probably best known from being a wrestler by the name of Zeus in the late 80s, maybe early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, because he really just...
Yeah, he's 6'8". And has that one wonky eye, I think.
Yeah, well, IMDb says 6'5", but...
Oh, okay, well...
He's kind of got that stupid, idiot savant, not without the savant part.
Yeah, you mean idiot?
Well, I don't want to be that harsh.
Okay, he looks a little Lenny.
Yes.
Yeah.
A little Lenny.
A little Lenny.
That's a good literal reference that half of the... going to get, but okay.
Well, hopefully they'll get it as Lenny from Mice and Men, not Lenny from Laverne and Shirley.
Laverne and Shirley?
Yeah.
No, they're gonna go with Laverne and Shirley. They're not going to get of Mice and Men.
Ah, but
now that we've told them of Mice and Men, we've given them all the breadcrumbs. Go read of Mice and Men. It's one of the few Steinbeck books I like.
Or just see the Gary Sinise version on TV. It's fine.
Of Mice and Men?
Yeah, I think he plays George.
Oh, I didn't know they... I didn't... I think I've seen the... The old school Robert Blake. Wasn't Robert Blake?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Or by the way, you can see The Stand. Stephen King's The Stand has a character that's much like Lenny that hangs around with Rob Lowe.
Oh, 1939. That can't be. That can't be the movie I saw. Huh.
By the way, Tom Tiny Lister was also in, I believe it's No Holds Barred, the Hulk Hogan vehicle. He plays the bad guy. To Hulk Hogan's good guy?
There was a Hulk Hogan movie?
Oh, there's been a couple, I think, but that was the big one.
We have come completely off the rails.
We have.
So this is a further stay off the rails, by the way. Of Mice and Men in 1939, which is the version of the movie I inexplicably saw, I don't know why, I must have seen it in literature class, but Burgess Meredith and Lon Chaney.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. Absolutely. I think I've seen that version as well.
Well, it's the only other version that exists that IMDb lists anyway. So,
is it Lon Chaney or Lon Chaney Jr.?
Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah, because he's a big guy. Like, you look at Lon Chaney Jr., like in The Wolfman, oh, he's a gigantic guy.
Yeah.
And very sad guy.
I
think he was an alcoholic and had a sad life. And
wow.
Anyway, Of Mice and Men is not an entirely happy story either.
No, it's not. It's not a happy story at all.
Yeah. Unlike The Fifth Element, which we will get back to in one moment. And we're back. So the year is 2263, and we have this great evil that has appeared on our galactic horizon, at least. And we have Father Vito Cornelius, played by Ian Holm, and the President of the Earth, Tom Tiny Lister, Zeus, from WWF. Okay, well, so then we meet, as the great evil is approaching, the Mondashians. I don't know why I can't pronounce that.
They keep saying Mondashian, so.
Mondashian? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so the Mondashians return to Earth, but they are ambushed by another race of aliens called the Mangalores. And the Mangalores are very, very orc-looking, you know, very Lord of the Rings monster kind of looking. But they also have the ability to shapeshift somewhat in interesting ways.
Anyway, they're kind of adorably ugly, though.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, they're none too smart and brutish and warlike. But they were hired by the industrialist Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg, Gary Oldman.
It's the greatest name for a villain ever, by the way.
Well, yeah, it translates well to French, or it translates from the French maybe well. And also, Gary Oldman, his character is so... First of all, his wardrobe and hair is straight up fashion runway craziness of Gautier.
Yeah.
Just his hair is ridiculous, but fun. I mean, not, you know, and then his accent is so weird. It's sort of like a Southern.
Almost hillbilly Midwest.
Well, I don't think hillbilly as much as say like Savannah, Georgia or Louisiana, not Cajun, but like genteel Southern.
Yeah. So like South Carolina.
Yeah, mint juleps are being served.
Mint juleps, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You can see him drinking a mint julep.
Gagnon, is that you? What an ugly face. It doesn't suit you. Take it off. That's better. Never be ashamed of who you are. You warriors, be proud. So what if the federal government scatters your people to the wind? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Your time for revenge is at hand. Voila, the ZF1.
No, I would think of him as a whiskey guy, but...
Well, perhaps, or just maybe some water with a cherry in it.
Yes.
So, apparently, though, Zorg, who is an industrialist and a bad guy, he's been instructed by the Great Evil, which they don't go into explaining how this relationship exists, and it's fine because it doesn't need to be. He is a big bad guy, but he is ultimately the tool of the great evil. And he's supposed to acquire the stone so that he can then, the evil will prevail, blah, blah, blah. But he's communicating directly with the great evil, which is also a strange thing.
Well, they're communicating by phone.
Well, yeah. And the technology in this movie, I think they handle it very well, but there's a lot of winks and nods in there. So, of course, right on time with the great evil is the Mondashians are coming to deliver the stones. But what happens is they are then ambushed by the Mangalores that we've just described, and all is left of their craft. The stones are gone, although the stones, I guess, were never on the craft. but all is left
spoilers.
Is the hand of the fifth element. So what do? They take this hand to the laboratory, and they use it to reconstruct the fifth element, the perfect woman, Lilo, played by Mila Jovovich.
Which is probably one of my most favorite sequences in the whole movie.
When she's constructed?
The regeneration chamber, and then the graphics, and the concept was kind of impressive.
So is the idea that she was in that big, bulky metal suit to begin with?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like her head would fit. But again, I don't know how alien technology works.
Her head would fit? What are you talking about?
Didn't they have little heads? The alien guys have those little heads?
Are you talking about, like, Whitley Strieber's aliens?
No, I'm talking about the Mondoashians.
The Mondoashians? But she was the fifth element. She's not necessarily Mondoashian.
But didn't they get her out of the hand of the Mondoashian?
Get her out of the hand.
Yeah, they were using the recovered hand.
It was her hand.
So she
was
just
encased.
So she just happened to be there. But I thought it was the hand in the glove that was on the steering mechanism, the yoke, if you will. It's fine.
Regardless. The details. I mean, she just happened to be on the ship in her little elemental suit, her little sarcophagus or whatever it was.
Well, there you go. Okay. So anyway, they were delivering her anyway, so that works out. So
right.
they come up with no stones, and not only no stones, but also no balls, because instead of the perfect human, apparently is a woman.
Ha ha! Surprise! The chick.
Yeah.
And cue the titties.
Of which I believe at the time I may have seen this movie with Drew, and I think at the time I thought. She's kind of flat-chested for the perfect woman. But then again, this was long ago when I was a pig.
Well, I thought similarly, but then, you know, she's supposed to be able to kick ass, and so you want her to be more bruiserish and less, I don't know, bustly.
Oh, yeah, no,
they're just getting wet.
Oh, she was real fit.
Oh, yeah, no, she could probably still kick all of our asses.
Oh, most definitely, yeah. And, I mean, I thought she did fine in the movie, by the way. It's, you know. And I like watching her in action movies. She's like, turns out to be a pretty good action star.
She's not got a bad band either.
Oh, see, I've never heard her band. Yeah, well, she's multi-talented.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, so we construct Lilo in this chamber. And, of course, she comes to life completely unfamiliar with her surroundings. Although she speaks, I guess, the divine language. And she escapes from this place she's not supposed to be able to escape from, and is chased by the space cops briefly, and ends up jumping off a ledge and crashing into the flying taxicab of one Corbin Dallas, Bruce Willis, which, as it turns out, is reminiscent of the movie Collateral, because Jamie Foxx is driving a cab, and somebody fell out of the sky and landed on his cab, and that kick-started his adventure.
I haven't seen it, so...
Well, Drew and I talked about it, I think, in episode like 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 or something.
No, I listened to the episode. I just haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. Well, I instantly thought
after the episode, I was like, you know what?
Oh, yeah. If you listen to the episode, you don't need to see the movie unless you just really want to experience the magic, because the plots are all spoiled.
I see.
Anyway. So, Corbin Dallas, who we've actually met earlier on. And are you familiar with the comedian... Dov Davidoff?
No.
I thought he was the mugger at the door that tried to mug Bruce Willis. Turns out that wasn't who it was, but...
Oh.
Just reminded me of that. Bruce Willis, of course, is Mr. Cool. That's who Bruce Willis plays. In fact, according to Kevin Smith, as you pointed out earlier, don't suggest to Bruce Willis that he play anyone but Bruce Willis.
Yeah, he was playing Bruce Willis. You're right. I mean... He was playing a sci-fi version of Bruce Willis, but it was Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and that's fine, because that's what you want. And Bruce Willis is compelling to watch.
Yeah.
Whether he only was able to give that one take was sufficient. So he's, you know, cracking wise and giving those Bruce Willis stares and is wry and funny, but getting the job done. And they have a lot of, like, the design of his apartment, a lot of detail went into that. Like, the fact that he's, issued, 4 cigarettes a day, and they're mostly filter. And,
which is hilarious, by the way.
Oh, it is. And all of his whole apartment is very small, but also very modular. So, the bed just folds into the wall, and the kitchen, or I guess the refrigerator, slides down and becomes your shower.
And except it's hard to figure out how that would save space, because you'd have to have space above and below you, which everybody would have to have the same space.
It's true, but you could get rid of all that stuff in between. Like the open, like, no, there's no open concept apartments in his building.
Yes.
Except that it apparently opens up to the outside so that guys in, I guess, Chinese junks can fly by and feed you a meal prepared individually for you.
And can we talk a moment about that? How would he make a living going window to window?
Yeah, it seems like it would be a very expensive meal.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Because he's serving one guy in this big boat.
Yeah, exactly. It's like being a personal bartender, too, because he's chit-chatting and making bets. So it's almost like this guy is a restaurateur as a hobbyist. So Bruce Willis is a cab driver, but he's, of course, a former Special Forces officer, highly decorated. He's also a divorcee who is looking for the perfect woman. Wink, wink. He'll never find her, except that, of course, she falls into his cab.
Naturally.
And again, this is the scene of all of the cabs and cars flying by at different levels. I mean, it's very, they went big on the production of this movie. Like, they didn't cheap out.
No, like I said, there was a huge special effects budget for this movie, and they utilized it. And it was effective, but, they pulled out all the stops, as they would say.
Well, and as we talked about, I mean, details are important. The thing with the cigarettes and the thing with, I mean, even like Connie had remembered when I told her we were doing Fifth Element, she quoted two things and I didn't recognize either of them as actual quotes. She said, "Ooh, multipass." And then she said,
"Multipass."
Then she said, "Super green," because things were green. They were super green. So, anyway, more of a stunt casting, by the way. General Monroe, who is in the beginning of the film on board one of the spacecraft that is, or is he on board? No, maybe he's just with the presidential detail. But I thought he was Tobin Bell from the Saw movies. And turns out it's his name is Brian James. And like he died in 1999 or something.
Yeah, but he's been in a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's like the go-to bad guy in 80s movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was
I think it's funny that you thought he was Tobin Bell, but
I totally thought he was Tobin Bell. In fact, if you look on the internet, you can actually see, I think somebody had posted on some board somewhere, a conspiracy theory that maybe Tobin Bell or Brian James faked his death and became Tobin Bell.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, but anyway, it's pretty funny.
Now, by the way, Mr. Brian James was in Tango and Cash.
A movie I've never seen.
Yeah, I've seen parts of it. It's a terrible movie. It's terrible. I think I sat through, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but that's a Kurt Russell vehicle, right?
Yeah.
And Kurt Russell can really not do wrong.
Yeah. He was also, Brian was also in Enemy Mine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's, how many acting credits does he have on IMDb?
Cagney and Lacey.
Well, of course.
He was in Chip. Wow.
We have a channel that I've just discovered on our Dish Network that is, I think in Anchorage, it's like a UHF type channel. Although I don't know how that works with digital, but it shows all of those syndicated shows like Chips and Perry Mason and that kind of thing.
So you have to check out the IMDb for this guy. He was on Chico and the Man. He was in the Rockford Files. He was in Roots.
Yeah. How many acting credits? What's the total?
168 credit.
Yes, yes. He's Johnny Everyman.
He was a busy guy.
Sure.
He was in the Waltons, for God's sakes. And BJ and the Bear. All right.
Anyway, so originally thought it was like Benny Hill type stuff, but just a lot of caper things because we have all these forces set against each other. You know, we have the priest who needs to get everything in line, including the Fifth Element and the stones. And then we have the government, you know, the military, the president, who needs to get the Fifth Element and the stones so they can save the world. I guess the priest has informed them of that. But then we have Zorg, who's trying to get it for the evil. And then we have the Mangalores, who are trying to get it to basically spite Zorg.
Well, they're trying to get it because of the failed deal that they had, because they originally didn't cut the deal.
Yeah, they delivered the box with the stones, but the box didn't include the stones. So
yeah.
Zorg said, no dice.
Right.
Which then, and killed a bunch of them, so now they're after him.
Well, they killed themselves, really.
Well, yes. In a very clever way.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, again, there's a lot of sort of slapstick comedy in this. Or maybe it's not, slapstick's probably the wrong word, but like, you know.
Yeah, it's not slapstick.
Like broad comedy. Yeah.
Right.
So then Dallas, now that he's got this the chick in the cab, delivers Lilo to Cornelius and his apprentice David, who was wearing a cross between a yarmulke and the Devo hat.
Exactly. It was a Devo hat.
Which is great. But at this point, we reveal that Cornelius will do anything to fulfill this saving the world thing. He's definitely end justifies the means kind of guy.
Right. He has no morals except to save the world.
Yeah, which is, you know, when you think about it, that is a good end.
No, that's the quality you want.
Yeah.
You know, that can do, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to get this done attitude. You know, I'll get the job done, but, you know, it might get messy.
Well, you kind of expect that more out of a Bruce Willis type character than the priest type character, but which is why it's kind of fun. And all along, like Lilo and Dallas, by the way, Corbin Dallas, that's one of those movie hero names that's just absurd.
But well, I don't know.
Anyway, so, and I don't, maybe you know a Corbin Dallas, who knows? But to me, it just sounded like Manly Man Man.
Did you just say that?
Yeah, I did.
You did it in like a girly way, too.
Manly Man Man?
Yes.
Okay, well, I don't know about that. Anyway, but Bruce Willis is an absurd name anyway.
Like, he's going to come and kick your ass now.
Yeah, well, whatever. Bruce Willis, what is his real name? Can you look it up?
I have no... That's not his real name?
I'm guessing Willis is a middle name or something.
Really?
I'm must be. I bet you his name is like...
Okay, Wikipedia. Are you going to be sometimes right? Walter Bruce Willis.
Oh, well, okay. I was wrong. Stand corrected. I'm sorry, Mr. Willis.
He's a kraut.
He's... He's from Germany? Was he born in Germany?
Yeah, Rhineland.
Oh, well.
Eider Oberstein.
Bruce Willis. Uber Alles. Anyway. Okay, so. So we've got off the topic, just a little off the field, just a little bit. But that's okay. This will be the hallmark of our podcast, of course, is going off in tangents.
That's what we do.
So
That's the innate charm of us.
I hope so. I hope people find it charming.
If they don't, they can... Come on and tell us.
Exactly. If you don't like us, call the hotline.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Poking at them. I dare you. I dare you to call.
That's right. You lousy sons of bitches. Call the voicemail. A curse on all of your families. Wait, hold on. The only people listening are my family, so never mind.
Yeah, I was like, hey, shut your mouth. That would be me.
Yeah, okay. Okay, anyway, so. We
I have enough bad luck without your help. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah. So Dallas delivers the girl. He, by the way, kisses her against her wishes. So that does not meet with good things. So he leaves, thinking he is done. But then, of course, just as he thinks he's out, they pull him back in. And I guess we discover that the stones are in, what is it called? Floston Paradise? Is Paradise the city or the ship or what's that?
Well, Floston is, I think it's the planet Floston.
And is the Paradise like the boat?
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, so he needs to go to Floston for the government now to get the stones. And the priest is already going to Floston, but they can't make it in time because there's only all the flights to Floston are booked because of this big celebration they're having. But right. Then to get Bruce Willis to Floston... the government makes him the winner of the contest, where he can take...
Yeah, they rig it.
Yeah, one lucky guess to Floston. And then some mayhem ensues at the airport involving a bald model that I had to look up, who is credited... Her character is called the Tawdry Woman, which I thought was a strange choice, because really, okay. She just looks like a bald model. But there's some straight up Benny Hill action involving people going into all the compartments in Bruce Willis's apartment. And then there's some sort of shoot 'em up action at the airport. And then we meet Ruby Rod.
Time to join Ruby Rod and Corbin Dallas, the lucky winner of the Gemini Croquette Contest.
Coming at you live from Floston,
Paradise!
Ruby Rod, I just started for 2 hours with Lucky Corbin and the manager of the Super Green Hotel and Miss Gemini Croquette in person at 8,000 other Luxus here to enjoy the privilege of the unique concert of Miss Plavala Guna! Beautiful concert hall, all the universe, a perfect replica of the old opera house. But who cares? To my right, a row of ministers, more sinister than ministers, to my left, Baby Ray, star, stage, and screen. He's not gonna get much out of this concert because he's stoned out.
To who?
And here we have Roy Von Baker, king of laser ball. And here the emperor of Soda Jafet, his lovely daughter, recently confessed to me. By the way, I have a recording of a talented voice. I play the rest of the song after the concert because right now it's time for Corbin to say the word of the day. So tell me, my man, you were happy here in the big world.
Thrill.
And now, Japan!
I've never come.
Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
And here's where, when I watched it the first time for this podcast, I felt a little bit bad about kind of ragging on Chris Rock. I felt bad in Dogma. I felt bad enough that I was talking to my friend Mike at work about whether I was just holding Chris Rock to a higher standard, because I actually like Chris Tucker as Ruby Rod. He was way over the top and sort of doing a Chris Tucker kind of character. Mm-hmm. And Mike pointed out that it was probably the way it was written, because Chris Rock in Dogma was basically delivering Chris Rock stand-up lines. I mean, he was just basically set up to do his little stand-up routine kind of thing. And it wasn't like a character that he fleshed out.
Right.
And because Ruby Rod was so physical, it was all, you know, performance art kind of thing. So like I said, I actually, although I didn't mind Chris Rock, I just didn't think, I thought it was a little beneath him. I thought this was right spot on for Chris Tucker.
Right spot on in what respect?
Well, it just, he pulls off this crazy character. Okay, you obviously have a different opinion, so let's talk about Ruby Rod.
No, I knew you were going to do that.
Yeah, of course. I had to.
It's absolutely... he's a ridiculous character, but... And I know he's intended to be annoying, but he's annoying in that way that grates on me. Like, I just... Like, I want to just pull my eyes out with pickle forks. So, His whole character lends to the movie because he's supposed to be, you know, annoying and crazy. And they cast it well. You know, it's good casting, because God knows, I just wanted him to die.
Well, see, I kind of expected that when he was not on the air, he would, like, his voice would drop like 3 octaves and he'd be like, "Yo, man, how's it going?" But no, but that wasn't the case at all.
It turns out he was the diva.
Yes, exactly. Well, and then, see, the diva actually turned me off. We're all going to Floston to the performance of this diva, whose name I won't even try to say.
Plavala Guna.
There you go. Means no worries all the rest of your day. Plava Laguna. No, maybe not.
It was supposed to be translated to something like Blue Lagoon or something.
Oh, there you go.
Which is why she was blue, and anyway.
Yeah, she just, I don't know. I mean, that looked like out of a 16-year-old sketchbook. And of course, I thought that maybe because I don't like opera, that the first part of the singing was just driving me sort of, you know, it was like, stop the singing. At least when they dropped the dubstep beat at the end of it. you didn't like that part.
You and I have opposite. We like the opposite parts of the music.
Yeah, and I guess it really wasn't dubstep, but there was a drop where they dropped the music in there, and it had a little bit more of a dance beat to it.
Yeah, it's Derek's music.
Yeah, well, you know what?
It's what I call Derek music. I know when Derek comes because I can feel the vibration through the wall.
He can oomps you down the street.
Yeah, that's terrible. He likes to make sure that...
Sorry.
See, that just sounds like you're stuttering in German. You know, I just... Derek likes to make sure that everybody else can enjoy his stereo when he drives down the street.
Well, he's a man who's proud of his stereo.
Well, I guess we all have our vices.
He's got big woofers. And a shiny tweeter.
I'm writing this down.
Hey, if you got the biggest woofers on the block.
How do you know this? What knowledge? How have you come to this knowledge?
You can feel it down the street.
Okay, I think we're moving on now.
Anyway, okay. So we have the concert scene. And, of course, we have a little bit of Action Jackson, Three Stooges fighting by Mila against the Mongolors in the Diva Suite. And then we have a little Die Hard meet Star Wars on the ship inside and outside of the auditorium.
Right.
And they get the stones from, I guess, inside the Diva.
Yep.
Where
she secreted them upon herself.
Yeah, which is a little strange, but oh well.
Well, I mean, yeah, what a great place to smuggle them. I mean, she's basically a coke mule.
I was going to say, yeah, did she just swallow them in big condoms, or how did... I don't know.
I don't know. I guess it depends on her, you know, what. Well, she's got good vocals. She must have good throat capacity.
Yeah, well, or she
swallows something.
She's an alien. She's got that snake stuff going on in her head, so who knows what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know. It's some kind of weird hentai tentacle induction system.
Yeah, maybe she got them into her by, like an anaconda at the dog park.
See, you're almost there, and then you just choked.
Yeah, I know. I tried, but it didn't. Yeah.
you'll take it out in post.
No, I won't take it out in post. I'll leave it. It's fine. So, of course, we have this fighting action going on, blah, blah, blah. I mean, all very visually pleasing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not blah, blah. Obviously, the bisque was good. But you want to experience the magic for yourself watching all the fight scenes.
Yeah.
And by now,
I thought it was well done.
Oh, no, I thought it was great. And by now, Ruby Rod is part of their little team.
Yeah, he is the Dakota Fanning of this movie, by the way.
Just a lot of screaming?
Yeah.
I assume you mean
screaming. Yeah.
Dakota Fanning in
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds, yes.
Yeah, her screaming should have had its own credit. So.
Yeah, well, you know. Hey, to be a scream queen at age 9 or something, it's pretty good.
And I really like Dakota Fanning because she was in the Spielberg Alien series Taken, which is fantastic, except for the last episode. But
she's a good actor. I'm fully on board the Dakota Fanning camp.
Okay, well, good on you.
Yeah, no, I mean, not in a creepy way.
Sure.
So, of course, then we have to activate the stones. Oh, there's some little silly humor where we get rid of Zorg, but again, that's better experienced than talked about.
Right.
And then there's, of course... in the middle of this whole thing, Lilo has been looking at the dictionary or something, trying to learn English and looking through world history, and she decides maybe she doesn't want to save the world because it's all war and fighting.
Yeah, quite the social commentary, by the way.
Yeah, but then there's the ridiculous end speech by Corbin Dallas.
1 minute.
Let's go! Lilo! Wake up! It's time for you to work now.
Protect life. Until death.
No! Lilo, listen to me! Listen! I know you're very tired. I'll take you on a vacation when we're done. I swear, a real vacation, a real vacation, just you and me. But listen to me, if you don't do something right now, we're all gonna die. Do you understand?
It's the use of saving life when you see what you do with it.
It'll be entering the atmosphere in 40 seconds.
Lilo, you're right, but there are some things, very nice things worth saving, some beautiful things. Beautiful things.
Like love.
Yes, love. That's good. That's a good example. Like love. Love is worth saving.
I don't know love. I was built to protect, not to love. So there's no use for me other than this.
No. You're wrong. I need you. I need you very much.
Why?
Because.
Tell her, Corbin.
Please, don't you need me?
And then they end up kissing with her permission now. And then she saves the world.
That's the morality play of this story is that, you know, love conquers.
There you go. See, that's, to me, it was a lot of cheese.
It's a cheesy movie.
Yeah, but it was fun.
I mean, it had plenty of cheese. I mean, for God's sakes, they employed Tricky.
Exactly. Tricky was one of the better actors in the movie, though. I thought he was great.
No, he did a really good job. And I like Tricky. I've got a couple Tricky CDs, so.
I just like his accent.
Listen, I only have one Corbin Dallas on my list, and he's already checked in, okay?
That's impossible. I am Corbin Dallas.
Sorry, sir. Boarding is finished.
Hey, wait. Hey, I need to talk to someone. I don't believe this.
This is not an exercise. This is a police control.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Put your hands in the yellow circle.
It's been a mistake.
Well, his raspy, smoky singing voice is pretty cool. So
yeah, see, I don't know if I don't think I've experienced the majesty of magic of Tricky's. Although I'm sure I've heard it.
I will email you a track.
Does it have
I'll email you a link to a track.
Does it have any oomph to it?
It's oomph-tastic.
Okay, yeah. If it's got a beat and other people can dance to it, that's what I want.
You've probably heard the song. You may not have known it was him. Maybe not, I'm assuming. But he had a hit, relatively. Christian Sands was one of his hits, so. Anyway.
I don't know. Yeah, excellent. So, by the way.
And you'll probably hate it appropriately. So,
are you familiar with the podcast Rona and Beverly?
No.
Okay. Are you familiar with the Mike Myers character Linda Richman Coffee Talk?
Yes.
Yeah, that was Corbin's mom, of course.
With Paul Baldwin.
Exactly. We talk about Barbara, and I thought that was kind of fun having that character be his mom.
Yeah.
She's not credited except for in special thanks, but the actress is Jill somebody or other. Jill Mulan, maybe. I was trying to figure out who was the guy who played the voice of Finger, like his old army buddy and cab manager guy.
Yeah,
because I thought it was the guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm, the big guy, but it's not. Turns out.
Did you find out who it was?
Not directly because he's not actually credited.
The internet suggest that the voice of Finger was played by Nick Chinlund.
Do we know
who also started with Bruce Willis in Tears in the Sun, which I have no idea. So
Tears in the Sun?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I have no idea. I, there's no idea if this is accurate, so I don't know. But and by the way, of all of the evil creatures, Agnot's my favorite. So
which one's Agnot?
He's the leader.
Oh, the guy who, the black guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Well, he's not really the black guy.
Because he's
shape-shifting.
He's more of a gray-green guy.
Okay.
So at the very end, of course. Like
all the flight attendants and the costumes are very 50s.
all of the costumes were very stylized. That's what I liked. It's like all the flight attendants' costumes were very specific, and all of the, even the Mangler's costumes are very specific.
Yeah. Well, and you noticed that there was, and I'm surprised you haven't brought this up yet, that the plane sequence was very, you know, almost 2001-esque.
It was indeed. Yep. Yep. If it was actually, and the priest hanging out in the wheel well was very much like Take Shelter, where Michael Shannon took his family down and hid in the shelter.
I was going to go with like Passenger 57.
No, see, I don't remember. I know about Passenger 57. It's always been all black. Also, pay your taxes, people. Pay them.
So why you got to be hating on people?
On Wesley Snipes? Because he didn't pay his taxes.
No. Lots of people don't pay their taxes. I think Lauryn Hill got in trouble for it too, right? Didn't she?
The Situation just got in major trouble for it.
The Situation?
Yeah, whatever that guy's name is from Jersey Shore.
Oh, I know nothing about Jersey Shore.
Yeah, well, the fact that he didn't pay $8 million in taxes means he made entirely too much money.
Okay, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah. So anyway, love conquers all. And in the end, it's Lilo Dallas and her multipass.
Yeah.
So all in all, a fun movie.
No, it's a great fun sci-fi flick. It's, you know, with the exception of the titties, it's a pretty good family movie too. It's not too scary. It's not too violent. There's not much blood. You know, there's some adult humor.
Well, no, and even I thought the nudity was tastefully done. I mean, she's mostly covered, and then when she's not, everybody turns around. So it's, you know, it's very fun.
Yeah. I mean, they made a point of, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe when you first saw her as the perfect woman, it was strange because, as Roger Ebert points out, she has, like, red hair but blonde roots. How does that work?
Well, yeah. They talk about this in the trivia notes. There's stuff about that.
Yeah. And also, you know, the, like, the whatever little costume that they had on her in the very beginning, basically, like, strips of gauze or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. They,
well, they were thermal bandages.
There you go. Yeah. Well, basically smushed her boobs down anyway, so that probably didn't help, you know. So anyway, any more thoughts on the wonderful movie, Fifth Element, which I highly recommend?
No, it's a fun movie. It's an infinitely rewatchable movie. So yeah. It doesn't come out dated.
No, it just comes out fun. That's the advantage of sci-fi movies, is that you can, you know, there's not, unless they're super CG and the CG is bad, because this was top-notch CG.
Yeah, this is very well done. And visually, it's a stunning, stunning movie. I mean, it's just a beautiful movie.
Did it win, or was it nominated for Academy Awards for production design or costuming?
Oh, I have no idea.
We should find out. I wonder if there's a machine that can tell us that.
Is it usually included on the wiki page? I mean, or in the wiki page?
I didn't look at the IMDb trivia.
Does it say on trivia usually?
No, it'll say on the awards section at the very top. I think it had to have been nominated for costumes. Yep, nominated for best effects, sound effects, editing. Wait, that's it? Sound effects editing? Well, I mean, granted, you liked that part of it, and it totally clicked with you.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was. The sound, it's great sound. It really is. And, you know, the music, for the most part, is pretty good. Because there's no real, I mean, there's a couple songs, but not really. But, no, it got nominated. It had some awards.
Oh, yeah. No, it won. It was nominated for, European Best Film. It won a bunch of genre awards.
The Razzies?
Oh, yeah. This made a lot of lists of the best and worst summer blockbusters.
Mila Jovovich got the worst supporting actress, and Chris Tucker got the worst new star.
Oh, but they were nominated. They did not win.
Right. No, but still, the nominated counts. I mean, and so the band, by the way, was Pucifer.
Pucifer?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, actually.
So, and she's part of the band. I don't know if she actively tours with them, but she can be heard singing, so.
I mean, you know, she speaks multiple languages, she's a model,
Well, and if you read the trivia, apparently she and Luc Besson created the Lilu language together, and had gotten so much of it in tech that they were able to carry on entire conversations in the language.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's attention to detail.
No, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, she clearly liked working on this movie, you know, as much as he probably enjoyed making it. And of course, you know, it probably didn't hurt his feelings to have a kind of hot star.
Oh, no. I'm sure she would add anything to your motion picture. Although maybe not. Sometimes people like that are like divas and horrible to work with. But maybe that was just the Bruce Willis part.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, too funny. Too funny. So, anything else about Fifth Element before we move on?
Nope. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. We haven't ruined it for you. There's nothing to spoil. I mean, you know going into it what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a very visual movie. If that may sound like sort of redundant. But it's all about the experience of watching. It's not so thinky.
Not so thinky.
Yeah. And it won't give you the feels.
No. Well, there's a couple parts, though, but not too much of the feels. You're right.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.